This episode of the FitCast is brought to you by the PTAdvantage.com, an online resource to help trainers save time and make more money. It is hands down the best resource that I've found for distance coaching. If you're interested in doing it, check them out at the PTAdvantage.com. Well, welcome to episode number 287 of the FitCast. My name is Kevin Larrabee, and I'm very happy to have on the show for this episode, Jen Sinclair. Jen, how you doing?
Good. Thank you for having me on here today.
Yeah, so we got a lot of stuff to talk about, and for people that don't know you, they may have seen your influence on a t-shirt.
Yes, the t-shirts. They are everywhere right now, and they say either lift weights faster or unapologetically strong. Or stronger. And I didn't actually mean to become a t-shirt maven, but it happened because I kept thinking of things that I wanted to wear. And then I realized I could just go ahead and make them.
Yeah, that's the great thing. Today you have things like Teespring or whatever that can help you print t-shirts and things like that. And it's just really great because sometimes you can't really find what you want on an online store or even at a retail store. Sometimes you just got to make it yourself.
Right. And I'm really picky about material and mm-hmm. fit and like that combed cotton bullshit. No, thank you. so I went and picked out exactly what my favorite t-shirts were and then went from there.
Yeah, and it's strictly why I have a closet full of the Tri-Blend Elite FTS shirts is from...
Exactly. The Tri-Blend is where it's at.
Yeah.
For t-shirts.
I'm literally wearing one right now just because they're the most comfortable shirts that I can kind of find. So.
Well, you're about to add another one to your... to your closet because I'm going to send you one after the show.
For sure. Yeah. No, it's going to be hopefully a good strength circuit or something that I'll do at the end of a lift, and then I'll have nice, you know, sweat on it and stuff and send a picture. And
that makes it authentic. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you got to break it in.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And like the thing about it, and it's not just t-shirts either. I've got a bunch of tank tops too, because I'm so particular about like the cut of the tank tops too, because nobody's got time for the straps that go directly over your shoulders. You need a racer back. Like, there are so many things.
I don't know what that is, but I'm going to take your word for it.
Okay, I appreciate that.
Okay, so let's get into some of the questions. We got a lot of things to talk about. Like I said, some great audience participation for this episode. We're going to go to the first question from Jen B. And Jen, I'm going to let you know, Jen B., that I kind of abbreviated your question a little bit just for the sake of time, but this should get the point across. So, Jen, how do you hold clients accountable? Do you think it is necessary to put most of the responsibility on them?
That's such a great question. And I think the trainers are really split on the answer to this question. One, you've got one camp saying, if your clients fail, it's because you failed. And then the other one is saying, like, it's their journey. All you can do is support them. And I think, like anything, the answer is probably somewhere in the middle. I think there's a balance between placing the responsibility on the client and then doing what precision nutrition coach Krista Scott Dixon calls holding the bag of shit. And there are situations where somebody is, you know, completely shirking responsibility and for what happens to him or herself. And you can feel that instinct of like the drowning person to take you down with them. And they're what she calls that is like, they're trying to give you their bag of shit and you have to learn not to hold it. That said, I think that one of the biggest components of change is making a connection with somebody. I'm reading this really great book right now called Change or Die. And the first step in change is finding someone who believes you can change or finding some sort of inspiration. And that's like the relate stage. And it's important to find inspiration somewhere to find somebody who believes in you or believes that it's possible. And so I think that that's where the trainer client relationship comes in. You are responsible for how things progress, but you're not entirely, you know, like all you can support them and you can connect with them. And then that makes a big difference. And then the second stage in this book, Change or Die, is repeat. So it's, you've got relate first and then repeat. And that's when the person is learning and practicing new skills. And that's, you know, that's your time spent in the gym training. You're talking about diet, you're practicing healthy habits. Like, it's the practice stage And then the third stage is reframe. So that's when they move into a new way of thinking and a new way of being, and it becomes a little more automatic. I care about my clients so much, and I think that there is a lot I can do to facilitate their success. Like, the first and foremost, I want to create a really safe space where they can challenge and explore what they're able to do and find some flow and do some work and then be part of a community. And so I'm from a team sports background throughout my life. And I know this about myself, and I consider it a strength that one of the first things I do in any situation is try to build a sense of team. And I try to figure out how we could best play to everybody's strengths and support each other and have that collective win. And collectively, that win, I think, as a coach, is forming a really tight-knit community or building that safe space. And I think that is built-in accountability then for your clients. Like, that's the piece that I'm responsible for, is like making the gym a place that they want to come to and that they will continue to come to. And after that, as long as the workouts are on point, they're going to see results.
See, this is bad because I just bought a book already. We're 5 minutes into this and I just bought a book. It's great. It's available on Audible.
Is it? Yeah. Oh, I love that.
Yeah, I'm kind of an Audible crack addict right now. So really interesting stuff, because I think one of the most interesting components to what we work with clients and things like that is accountability and figuring out what, you know, how to find them their willpower.
Yeah.
For this change. So I'm looking forward to getting into that book and seeing if I can find some more tips.
Yeah, it's super interesting. And I think that the piece we're responsible for is the environment at the gym. You're not going to be following people around and making sure they do eat that and don't eat that and that they're coming to their workouts. But you can make the piece that involves you really spectacular, and then that increases compliance.
Yeah, the environment of the gym is something that I've been talking about with people too. And you know, maybe finding the best gym near you might have to do more with the environment and less with, you know, sometimes the coaching. Just finding a place where you feel comfortable to go and some place where you can get motivated to be at too.
Oh my God, is that true or what?
It's weird. Like, you want to go to a place where you like the music that's playing.
Yep.
You know, you want to like the people that you're going to be around. Obviously, you're paying to be with these people. You shouldn't, like, that's one of those things when you hear people. I think Alan Cosgrove talks about this a lot when he at his business seminars. But, you know, when you walk through that door, no matter what you have carrying with you as a coach or a trainer, you got to kind of leave that outside, and you got to make sure that you come in with, you know, a great positive attitude. If you don't love training people and training athletes or whatever you're doing in this field, for the love of God, find something that's going to make you love it again or stop doing it.
Exactly. I love when Alan says that, like, you've got to be the best part of their day.
Yeah.
Yep. I completely agree with that. And I coach a women's only strength group at Movement Minneapolis, and our group is so consistent. Like, we've got the women's only group, and then you've got the co-ed, for lack of a better term, classes. And the co-ed classes, like, you've got, yes, you have some regulars in certain classes. You've got the generally 5:30 people, the generally 6:30 people, but our women's only group meets they've got a lot of options, right? Like, they've got tons of options in the morning, at noon, at night. And our women's only group meets, you know, 3 times a week at a very specific time slot. And so they see this, they see each other every single time. Mm-hmm. Like, and so that group has been so consistent because they are their own community. And it's really fun to see, because those friendships that they've formed over the past year since we've started this has been like, they hang out with each other outside of class too now.
Well, let's talk a little bit about outside of the gym. Same Jen had another question, not to make this really too confusing, but she said, what's your take on handling consulting with people who aren't able to be in person to coach each week? And you know, if they really do need guidance. And I guess she says, we can only do so much with individuals, even though many need our help. So I guess talking about working with people that you aren't going to be seeing on like a 2 or 3 times a week basis, maybe you see them once a week, or maybe it's one of those distance coaching situations. Mm-hmm. You know, how do you handle that?
So that's a tough one, isn't it? I have kept my, to this point, I've kept my official coaching relationships limited to these real life coaching relationships because I prefer that dynamic, number one, and because I also coach a lot of pretty unusual lifts. So I really like to walk people through them in person first. Now, that said, through my writing jobs over the years, my column at Experience Life, it was a reader Q&A column, my blog there, my website now, and my Facebook page, and probably, you know, Twitter too. Like I have a whole lot of unofficial consultation relationships going on. And the best, you know, the best you can do is the best you can do. Like I used to stress out so much about the Facebook messages and the emails that I couldn't answer or that were going unanswered that I wasn't getting to. And it still gets to me sometimes, but you just kind of have to make peace with your best at some point. And okay, so that goes for the free information anyway. If someone is paying you to be their coach or consultant, you had better damn well get your system streamlined so you can actually handle those requests and be responsible enough to say no to money that you know you can't really earn by doing a good job. I now say no to jobs all the time because you cannot do everything. And it's far better to, I think, to knock it out of the park on the few things that you can say yes to rather than trying to do everything and not managing anything particularly well. So yeah, I think it's about saying no to what you aren't able to do and just taking on the consultation relationships that you're going to be able to honor.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that you got to make sure you stick with their expectations of what you're going to be delivering to, right?
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. And it gets the free information gets into an interesting dynamic too. I spend a lot of time answering questions for people who aren't clients. Mm-hmm. And I give as much as I possibly can. I like that. Like I know that some of our peers are, they don't, you know, they feel like it's a drag. Like, oh my God, like all these questions. I'm like, I really like that interaction. I really, really like people. I really like that dynamic of like, I think it's an honor to be able to deliver fitness information to people. Mm-hmm. And I take it really seriously. So I do as much as I can, but also I also forgive myself for what I can't get to.
So I wanted to talk to you about this idea, not the idea or not even the concept, but the discussion of body image that has been going on. A lot of stuff has been with the social networks and stuff these days. A lot of discussions have been going on about, you know, positive body image and all that stuff and how it's really, I want to talk to you how it's kind of been focused primarily on women, but I think men run into the same thing too. You have lots of guys that kind of, I mean, this guy's checking themselves out in the mirror in the gym all day, right? So clearly they have, you know, an image that they're going for too, and they're self-conscious. But, you know, what are your thoughts on this? Because it is kind of getting to be a bigger and bigger deal with all this stuff in the media.
Yeah, man, we just get so much shit between the thigh gaps and the fat shaming and the thin shaming and the body shaming that comes really in all shapes and sizes. Mm-hmm. And you're right. It is men and it is women. It's probably still more so women than men. Although I think that men are supposed to, you hear the air quotes, be bigger and women are supposed to be smaller. And that's, you know, like that's sort of, everybody's trying to be a little bit of what they aren't quite yet. And I have this really strange history where I ended up being immune from a lot of the feelings of being not quite right. That I think that a lot, the short answer is I played rugby. Like I played rugby and there's a position for any body size and any body shape. And you actually need everybody, you know, you need every body size and shape and skill set, and everybody has a job. But I think it's a really weird little niche. Like, and I'm trying to figure out a way to bring that idea of like being your best self and doing your best work for you to a wider audience, like to an outside of a sports context. And kind of thinking about it in terms of like, well, what, you know, what can I do best? And like, what, how can I look best? And like playing to your own strengths. I'm sure you've seen the fit mom, Maria Kang, like what's her nickname now? The woman who, with the three kids or whatever, who says, you know, what's your excuse?
Yeah, that kind of blew up too.
Oh my God. Yeah.
On everything, yeah.
and you had a lot of people who were defending her, and then a lot of people who were, you know, trying to take her out. And I think that it's kind of like, I think that that attitude of like, what's your excuse, is kind of bullshit. Like, what's my excuse for what? For not looking like you? Like, I'm not you. That's my excuse. And if you just worry about being the best version of yourself and not somebody else's version, and that's why the whole like Michelle Obama's arms and like Jessica Alba's abs and Jessica Biel's butt, like, we are not patchwork people. And as often as possible, I try to place the emphasis on doing with my clients, because like a lot of my female clients will come in, and at first they want to lose weight and they've got goals that are purely aesthetic. And then little by little, they get hooked on the feel of the barbell in their hands, and like that victory of PRs and of other like of tasks. So they end up changing slowly the way they look. They do end up changing the way they look, but it's not what they talk about as much anymore. And I think that the secret to better body image is probably to develop the kind of strength that ends up in your personality too.
Yeah, it's almost like, I don't want to call it like a fine line, but there's people that can easily debate either side, saying like, oh yeah, you know, you should use these people as motivation to get in better shape. And then again, there's the side where, you know, like you said, just kind of be the best version of yourself.
Well, I think that fit, like the whole fitspiration thing, like that affects people differently. Mm-hmm. It makes some people want to go eat a bag of chips, and it makes some people want to go to the gym. Mm-hmm. And you have to kind of take ownership, or know its effect on you. Like if you're scrolling through Facebook feed and you see abs and you feel bad about yourself and you go eat a bunch of cheese, like, mm-hmm. you know what? Like, start cutting these things out of your life. Start cutting the negatives out of your life. What's negative for you? Now, if you, on the other hand, like if you love seeing like the, you know, the lean, oily, ripped pictures and like it keeps you on point, great. Like, do that. Like it's not about comparison. It's not about right or wrong. It's not about, you know, looking like someone else. Mm-hmm. It's about looking like you.
Yeah, just get off Facebook, guys. That's a good way to stay motivated and to not get depressed. Sometimes people just post some terrible stuff on there.
I still like Facebook, but I like it probably a little less than I used to.
Yeah, you know, it's good that you can block people and all that stuff. I tend to do a lot of that. I mean, mm-hmm. I can only imagine, you know, being a female in the fitness industry, like how much, you know, I forget who posted. I think it was Molly who posted yesterday, like, guys like asking her if she's single and stuff like that, like how much constant stuff you must get from the outside.
Yeah, it's pretty fun and interesting, and like I do, again, like I value that interaction, and I think it's pretty amusing for the most part. Like I don't, for whatever reason, and maybe this will change at some point, but I don't get a lot of hateful messages on there. Like the haters thing, like, doesn't really. Mm-hmm. I think that if you cultivate an atmosphere of positivity,
yeah,
in your interactions, like you don't get a lot of blowback. I did, however, get a private message the other day from somebody. His whole message was, you have massive thighs. And then I said, thank you. Cause I, like, again, like I want him to know, I didn't know where he was coming from. But I wanted him to know that if it was an insult, like I wasn't going to take it as such. Like, so I said, thank you. And then he said, you're welcome. And then he gave me his phone number. So I guess it was a compliment. Yeah.
And I'm sure you went right to the phone.
So I posted it on Instagram because I thought that shit was funny.
You know, one thing that has been kind of knocking around my head the last couple weeks, I did, for people listening to this now, I've returned from Japan and I've kind of been doing lots of contemplation. And one of the things that I've kind of come back to is having fun with your training, having fun with your workouts, and not thinking of it as, you know, I'm just going in because I'm doing this strictly for health or for fitness or whatever, but still trying to have some fun. So I wanted to ask you, you know, what when you go into the gym, you're like, man, today so far has sucked. Like, I just want to go in and have some fun, you know, kind of push myself a little bit. What do you like to do?
I discovered a few years ago, 2008, actually, I was living in Philadelphia and I joined Urban Athlete, which is the gym that was, it still is owned by Pamela McElree, mm-hmm. and was then co-owned with Jason C. Brown. And I, that was the first time I'd ever really done circuit training, like on a regular basis, and kettlebell training. And I absolutely fell in love with it. Like, I love group fitness. I love, which I didn't know to that point. I love learning new skills. Like, and I really like being like that whole misery loves company thing. Like, I like being sort of in it with other people, who are, you know, not suffering, but like working really hard. And I still like, if I don't feel like sticking to my, so generally speaking, I stick to, a strength program, and then I supplement that with conditioning workouts. But if I, for whatever reason, I'm just like not feeling the strict strength, I will do circuits, or I will go on a walk. Like, I think it's about, or I'll like practice new skill work. I did the progressive calisthenics certification, this past June. And like, that's always good for a day that you need some novelty. But it's about rolling with how you're feeling that day. And sometimes like you get going, and then you're like, no, okay, I am in the mood. I am in the mood for a little bit more. And so you keep going. But I think that play is one of the most underrated aspects of the gym. And like, we get into these shoulds, like I should, or I have to do this. And I think that a lot of those are bullshit. Like, you can get pretty great results even if you aren't following your cookie cutter or your plan, like to a T.
Yeah, it's been cool to see things like MoveNet kind of blow. I think it's MoveNet that I saw that, where it's just like it's almost like balance beam play and stuff yeah. like that.
Yep.
And I just hopefully that message gets across to what I was kind of thinking about to the audience. But man, just sometimes you just you don't look forward to training anymore for a while. I'm what some people don't like. I was actually talking to some of the MBSC staff yesterday. Mm-hmm. Like, so I was asking kind of like the same question, because at the end of my lift yesterday, of course I was doing a nice circuit of kettlebell swings and easy bar bicep curls, because man, I wanted to do some bicep curls yesterday. And, I just figured I was working buns and guns, and it's working towards the whatever goal I'm looking for. And, some people just like to go in and train every day. And like you were talking about before, sometimes it's just the environment, going in and training with some friends. That's something I haven't been doing for a long time. It's just been going and lifting by myself, because everyone else is doing other stuff. But, sometimes meeting up with Tony Gentilcore, Tony, mm-hmm. what's up? And, doing like just a ton of volume with him, and just saying, I'm going to go in, I'm going to do whatever Tony's doing, just so I can hang out, have someone, you know, cheer me on, have someone coach me, makes a big difference. So it might be one of those things where you can almost say, you know, it might be worthwhile getting into a group exercise kind of thing for a little bit if you've been training by yourself, just to kind of change it up, like you were saying.
Yeah. And it's a balance between variety and consistency. Like, mm-hmm. you've got to repeat movements often enough that you get the response that you want, but you also have to do enough new stuff that you're engaged and you continue to treat your exercise sessions as playtime. Mm-hmm. I think that if we're doing this right, like, that's how it should feel, you know, like you should want to train. And if you really dread your training, I think that you should find a different way to train. Like, you should keep mixing it up until you enjoy moving, because I fundamentally, like, that is what we're built to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's going into like Perform Better summits. There's lots of hands on, and I'm always like sitting, or I'm standing, I'm either at a lecture or I'm standing out in the hallway talking to people, because I have stopped going to the hands on stuff. But, I can see a really good reason why you should, you know, no matter what it is, whether it's like a ropes thing or it's a kettlebell thing, or, you know, going to, man, go to like Doses conditioning class where you'll basically die.
I always go to Doses hands on, and then I have to bring a change of clothes.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. It's hopefully you got a hotel room so you can like at least go take a shower and change clothes and stuff like that. But, you know, that's another good way to try out some new stuff in just 2 days. If those are coming up real fast too. We're in March now. Those are coming up June, July, August.
I know. I can't wait. I can't decide which one to go to today. I always like to go to Long Beach. That's my fave probably, but Chicago's a little closer.
Go to all of them.
I've never been to the one out your way. That's the only one I haven't been.
Providence.
Providence is the only one I've never been to.
Yeah, Rhode Island is rocking. That's a wow. It's a happening city. Not really, but the Perform Better. I mean, it's always good. Like the, you know, it's the same cast of characters that always come up, and it's the nightlife that you really kind of get the most out of. It's like the talking outside of the
outside
of the talks. And even if you're going, if you're not like in this whatever circle of fitness people, if you're just listening to this, if you go to those things and you see, you know, whoever out in the hall, go up to them and ask them questions. Like, you know, there's, I was basically hanging out with like guys like Charlie Weingraf, just listening to him answer questions for an hour. And just, you learn so much just from being around these people. It's really invaluable. It's, and it's like $400. It's super cheap.
Totally. I was at the Changing the Game seminar.
Oh, how was that?
It was really fun. I ended up I love going to these things and going to every second of everything I can get my hands on. Like, I absolutely love the lectures. I still go to all the hands-ons mm-hmm. at Perform Better. I want to soak everything. I don't go just for the socialization. Socialization is fantastic, but I had signed up to go to Changing the Game, and then I got there and I'm right in the middle of this Lift Weights Faster project. So I ended up being a room troll. And I just stayed in my hotel room and wrote the entire time. And I caught like just a tiny piece of Alan Aragon's talk. And I went to my husband, David Delanave, was presenting on intuitive training. And so I went to his, but that was it. And I was so frustrated the whole time I was there. But even the little bit of time that I'd, you know, stopped by, I'd like was walking down the hall and like, you know, we ran into Brett Contreras and Ben Bruno. And then there was Dan John and there was Alan Aragon. And so like, it is value. Like, that's the hallway. Like, I didn't even go into any of the lectures. You're right. Like, the conversations that happen outside of the lectures are also invaluable.
Absolutely.
And Perform Better is probably the best networking event I've ever been to. Like, that was before I started going to Perform Better. I was a fitness editor. Yep. But I wasn't connected to the sources. Like, I had, you know, done interviews with sources over the years, like, because, but I'd like been, you know, I'd only known them online, and making that real life connection was huge. It was huge for the magazine I was working for at the time, which was Experience Life. And I was able to, you know, like tech, you know, then I could text experts and be like, hey, can you consult on this story about fill in the blank? And it was such a more intimate experience. And the reader, I think the end user got so much more out of it, because once you make those connections, like, there, it's much easier to get access to all the sources you want to get access to.
Yeah, that's a huge point for people that are, you know, trying to get into this industry. And it's one of those things that is kind of a weird topic to talk about, because a lot of people out there are, you know, they'll see people have success online and stuff like that, and they'll, you know, basically say, you know, they don't deserve that success. You know, I know more than them. But nobody knows that you know more than them, because you're not, you know, writing online, and the internet is gigantic. if you're not going out and like having a persona, having something to, have them to not remember you by, but you got to like introduce yourself to people. You got to make these networking connections. So, you know, if you do write something and someone sees you write it, they'll share it, or, you know, you'll be able to spread out a little bit. But man, that's the worst attitude to have when it comes to that stuff.
I completely agree. Like, the sour grapes thing, I do not have time for that at all.
Yeah. It's like, man, I'm coaching all day. I'm training people all day. No, if it's important to you, you'll find the time, right?
Yep. Find the time. Yeah. And like any other industry, the relationships are what this is about. Like, you're right. Like you said, like, you can be as smart as you want to be and have your own blog, but if you don't have any other connections, mm-hmm. then there's no one to share your blog. Like, there's no one to like to help you branch out in terms of audience. Like, Lou Schuler, so he's mm-hmm. you know, fitness publisher extraordinaire, fitness writer extraordinaire. I love his analogy of blogging. Like, when you first start blogging, you first start a blog, it's like shooting hoops in your own backyard. And then if you do a good enough job and you make connections and you're making, you know, you're connecting with other fitness professionals, they may ask you to guest blog for their site. And then, mm-hmm. so then that's the equivalent of like a neighborhood pickup game. And then if, you know, if that goes well, then you end up like, okay, then you end up playing for, you know, like a rec league or like, so you, and then that's the equivalent of like getting published on a little slightly bigger site. And so it, and then soon you're playing in the NBA when you get into, when you crack into like the print copy magazine business.
Yeah, man, that's a good call, Lou. I got to remember getting towards 300. I got to get Lou back on to, he seems to come on all the big numbers. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's the, he's like our
he's your milestone guy?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's the state of the union. He's, I think he's probably been on like three or four times, but, just bouncing off what you've been saying, I mean, before we started recording, we were talking about how we're coming up on like the 7-year anniversary for the podcast. And the only reason why this podcast got traction was because I emailed people. Like I emailed Craig Ballantyne. I emailed John Berardi, Lou Schuler, Chad Waterbury, people at the beginning who had no idea who I was. But, you know, if you just email people, the worst thing that is going to happen is that you don't get a reply. Send them a message on Facebook. Just start making connections. Let people know who you are. So when you do see them at a Perform Better, be like, you know, hey, I'm Kevin. You remember I messaged you about, you know, split squat progressions or something last year. Do you remember that? Whatever.
Yep. And that the thing about the fitness industry that has struck me is that the people who I used to be starstruck by, I'm still super respectful of what they're doing and the message they're spreading, but there aren't the people that we're talking about. Like, it's not like they're not unreachable. Like almost everybody will say yes to an interview.
Yeah.
So it like you take your shot, you know, like you said, what's the worst that can happen is a no or a non-reply. And even that's just not a big deal. And it's not personal.
No.
So who cares?
Man, that was good. That was lots of, hopefully people were taking their notes. That's a lot of, that's a lot of stuff. If you're getting into this stuff. So along these lines, Sasha, had a question about time management. She said, I would love to know her time management strategies. How does she structure her day to get so much accomplished? She has projects, writing, training, just having fun living, as well as, posting about it. How does she do it? What does her day look like, or month, or year? Thank you. P.S. She's awesome.
Oh, Sasha, thank you. That is such a nice question. And it's also hysterical right now, considering the timing, because I'm getting the final bits of my Lift Weights Faster conditioning library together, and have been for the past couple months. And I have not been to bed before 3 a.m. in about 4 days.
Oh my
so
God.
If I sound a little hyper today, it's because I am running on caffeine.
Hey, at least it still does something for you.
I know. Well, because I save it for these special occasions.
Yeah.
But for the past couple of weeks, every day I get up and I am in a dead sprint from morning until, morning. And it's not sustainable at all. And luckily, I don't have to sustain it. The video e-course is running this week, and the conditioning library is on sale next week. And then the launch ends next Saturday. And all I have to say is, thank God, because my usual schedule is like so much more preferable to this. As for what my usual schedule looks like, I am not going to pretend that I have that on lock. I do have a tendency toward overwork, but I really like my work. And so I find it to be really fun. So I can never quite decide if I want that part to change or not. The biggest change I made recently is that I decided to only train clients 3 days a week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, so that I can have Tuesdays and Thursdays, and then possibly, you know, Saturday and Sunday too, completely free for my magazine writing jobs and blogging and, you know, what other pieces of writing I want to do. Have you heard of like the makers versus managers schedule?
I have not. Is it a book?
It's, you know, I've only read an article on it. So if it's a book, but it stuck with me. If it's a book, I don't know. But so manager schedule is like full of meetings. It's like short blocks of time. You're very active and busy, you know, busy, and like it's a bustling day. The problem is, though, it's that is an awful schedule for creatives or makers who need, you know, these long, completely uninterrupted blocks of time. And even the tiniest meeting can throw things off. So that's why I protect my Tuesdays and Thursdays, you know, really fiercely, because even, you know, a 15-minute meeting in the middle of the day, like, will throw off my vibe for writing. Like, and I probably spent the first whole half of last year, after I went out on my own, trying to be a maker on a manager's schedule. And I tried to do everything and my boundaries were bad. And I said, you know, yes to too much. And I didn't get enough done. And I wouldn't take it back because I got to try a lot of things and I got to get clear on what I wanted to do more of and what I wanted to do less of. And then I got to put those changes in effect. So the word no is not the problem, but mushy boundaries are the problem. I put my, like, for instance, I really was trying to do way too much at the beginning of last year. And I was on my phone all the time. And it was just like, I liked that feeling of, you know, crisis and putting out fires and being that on the manager schedule. There's something, you know, addictive about that, but it really is awful for, friendships, relationships. It's like, put your phone away during meals, man. So now I only train, I train clients Monday, Wednesdays, Fridays, and I will then, you know, work out at the gym those days. And then if I feel like working out, on my Tuesdays, Thursdays, and weekends, I'll do that as well and try to schedule in fun adventures on those days too, because of that tendency to overwork. Like I have to, I'll schedule my fun time and I'll like buy tickets in advance as much as possible. Cause then I will not bag on it. And I won't say, I'm like, oh yeah, I've got too much work to do, because that's my favorite excuse. And like, I realize that there's a lot that goes, you know, there's a lot of story that goes into that, you know, telling yourself that you're too busy to fill in the blank. So I try to work around myself on that front as much as possible. And on that note, I have got tickets, I just bought, David doesn't really know this yet, but we're going to a flying trapeze class tomorrow night.
Nice.
I'm excited.
Yeah, that's again, one of those things that is kind of my goal coming back from Japan to work on, to experience more stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's something that, you know, I am jealous of people like you who I do see, you know, is always doing stuff, whether it's, you know, going hiking or going and doing trapeze stuff, I guess. And, you know, I think that is good for everyone out there to try to, I guess you mentioned before, get out of your comfort zone a little bit, and do something new. I think that is just really good to be in healthy mentally.
Yeah, I think that's a really astute observation. I believe that novelty is so important to humans. Like, I think we do really well on it. And I can never remember where I read this, but I know that I read it somewhere. And if somebody could just tell me where I read it, I would be eternally grateful, because now I've been trying to dig it up for the last year and can't recreate it. But I saw this study on happiness, and what had happened was that a group of people went out to dinner with friends, like went to dinner with their friends and their loved ones and like the people that they cared about most in life. And then the other group of people went out to dinner with, you know, brand new people and it was a novel experience. They were meeting, making new relationships, and guess who had a better time? Like, guess who reported more satisfaction and contentment and happiness afterwards? Like, it was the people who had met the new people. Like, we think that we want to stay comfortable all the time. We think that we want to do this. Like, we think we love routine, but it's like, that's not actually the way our minds work. Like, mm-hmm. Our brains work. Like, we thrive on new.
Yeah, I mean it's one of those things that I've done a really bad job of, you know, getting home from, you know, basically racing home from work to get home.
Yep.
Just to like, you know, be home, because that's like your comfort zone once you're done, and being really bad with social life stuff. So.
Oh, I've probably gotten a lot worse at it just very recently, especially with Lift Weights Faster, and I've vowed to get back. To doing more novel things. But you can't, it's not like, if your schedule is breakneck pace, like, and you work a lot, like if you are getting home late, like you can't wait to get home, then you've got to honor that too. Mm-hmm. It's like novelty is a place when you are ready, like when you're in a place that you're okay with more quote unquote stress, you know, like stressors, like, because new situations, you know, can be stressful. So it's like, you don't want to pile stress on top of stress. So if your work day is super long, yeah, go home and relax. Like, it's about finding that balance. Like, new is for when you're able to process new, not new on top of a situation that you're barely hanging on to anyway.
Yeah, again, I can't attribute this to someone specifically, but someone once said, you know, instead of spending your money on things, spend your money on experiences.
Oh yeah.
Instead, and that's something that I've been trying to do a much better job of. That's another thing that I've kind of fallen into. But yeah, thanks for joining Kevin's therapy session with Jen Sinclair. I appreciate it.
I love talking about this stuff. I mean, we're all working on it, right? Like there's nobody who pretends that they're on top of their game actually is.
Well, yeah, so. it's getting away from focusing on work all the time and being like worried about work all the time. Like even, you know, to the point where, you know, my boss, Mike Boyle, was like, Kevin, sometimes you just take a deep breath. Everything's going great. Just stop worrying so much about stuff and, you know, just relax, because I'm always like trying to get stuff done or, you know, trying to work on the next project or whatever. And, you know, again, I think that's really good advice for everyone. Like just look in the mirror, take a deep breath. Everything's okay.
You're really good at Mike Boyle's accent too. I'm impressed.
Yeah, I know. It sounds just like him. I mean, I don't have like a Bud Light Lime or anything that would add to it. If you go to the Perform Better seminars, you know what I'm talking about. Man, that's a summertime drink. So let's go to another question from Danny. Again, this is a hot topic. It's a hot topic on the internet. Most strength and conditioning gurus claim women should train the same as men, with research showing that women have disproportionately lower to upper body strength ratios. Is there a case to be made for women to train upper body strength more frequently? That's from Danny.
Okay. I may already do more upper body work than other trainers. I like lots of weight, lots of volume, because it supports my clients' goals. They want to be able to do pull-ups. Like that's the big one. Mm. So that, and they want to press the heavy kettlebells, and they want to do the weird lifts that we do at Movement Minneapolis. So we're always doing, you know, windmills and bent press and overhead press and jerks. Like I love the Olympic lifts, you know, push-ups, pull-ups, snatches, rows. So like the full body multi-joint exercises are big for us. And we do a lot of upper body stuff. I like the idea of frequent training for women. Like there is research to support the idea that we recover more quickly and that we're ready to train again sooner than men are. But the answer, I think, to Danny's question is the answer to anything is it depends. Like I think it's really tough to talk about how we should train all women, because what they want varies enough in degrees anyway that it changes how you're going to execute any sort of plan with them. So like, I guess let's not talk about women. Let's talk about woman. And so what is that woman's goals? Or specifically, does that woman have a fear of gaining upper body, you know, mass or size at all? Because if she's afraid of developing like traps and guns, you're probably not going to do extra, at least hypertrophy inducing upper body work with her. We talk about all the time, you know, like women aren't going to accidentally become bodybuilders. And that is absolutely true. Like we just don't have the hormonal profile to accidentally get super shredded. But it's also, I think, important to listen to what people don't want, because our bodies do tell the story of what we do in the gym, or not what we do in life. Like you've got, you know, the rounded shoulders of the computer programmers, and like everything is our bodies tell the story. And so if traps are on their no-no list, that probably means focusing more on like the more isometric work, or stack planks, or you could do, you know, pinch carries, which are by nature lighter than like heavy farmers carries. And it's going to depend on the person. Like some of my clients are pretty gunny and they like it that way. Like they want to be able to do pull-ups and strict press the heavy kettlebells. And so they like the way their bodies develop in accordance with those goals. But I don't think that there's a blanket answer for that.
Good call. Not one size fits all.
Nothing is.
Scott had a question. He would love to know your top five books or resources in the strength game.
I hate picking favorites. I hate it, because there are so many.
What about recently? What's been on like the top of your, you know, nightstand in terms of books? Like what have you been reading?
I've been doing a lot of mindset stuff lately. Mm. For strength books, you know, I love Greg Everett's book, Olympic Weightlifting. Like I refer back to that one often. I adore cardio strength training. I've been good friends with Coach Dose for about 5 years now. I met him at Perform Better actually. and I pay attention to everything he says with regard to training. Like, that man is a fount of training information. And when it comes to performance and fat loss, like, he is just like, I cannot say enough good things about him. I was an athlete for a really long time, and I still really like athletic types of training. Mm-hmm. It feels useful to me. And so I say, you know, I say cardio strength training, but that's shorthand for really all of what Coach Dose says. Like, coachdose.com, I think, is a great resource. Convict Conditioning is a good one. Naked Warrior by Pavel. Mm-hmm. Easy Strength by Dan John and Pavel. Mm-hmm. New Rules of Lifting are by Lou Schuler and Alan Cosgrove, also good ones. So all those are my, you know, strength and conditioning books. As far as the other stuff goes, like, Tribal Leadership is so it's a book that's purportedly about, you know, developing a truly thriving, like, business culture. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a book about successful gyms. And I think specifically it's a book about the magic behind successful trainers and, like, what they do to create that culture of success. It has to do with the level 4 in the book. So have you heard of Tribal Leadership?
I'm looking it up on Amazon right now. I actually just found it. It's cheap. It's only 10 bucks.
Oh my God. It's so good too. Like, so it's it lists the 5 stages essentially of the development of a business or a development of the people within a business. Mm-hmm. And like, stage 1 is like, life sucks. Stage 2 is my life sucks. And so you have at stage 2, you've got some, like, stage 1 is super depressed, like no positive outlook at all. Stage 2, it's like, you can recognize, okay, it's just, you know, like, my life sucks. I have it hard. Other people have it easy. Stage 3 is like, I'm great. But the implication is, and you're not. Those are the really, you know, competitive workplaces where one person, like everybody's trying to outshine each other. So still not super desirable. Stage 4 is where it gets good. And that's, we're great. And that's like, good gyms have a we're great mentality. The implication is still with stage 4 though, is, and they're not. We're great and they're not. So, you know, it's very teamy, and that's what I like about it. And I don't mean teamy, T-E-E-M-Y. I just mean like team oriented. Okay. And then stage 5, sorry, grammar geek. And then stage 5 is life is great. And that's where we're trying to get. Like, that's like you're trying to change things on a more global scale. And I think that the really great trainers, that's the message you hear from them. Like, life is great. It's not like, we're great, they're not. Like, so the good businesses, the good trainers waver between 4 and 5. Like, so Dave Logan, that's the author of this book, says that even really great businesses, they make brief forays into stage 5 and then they go back to stage 4. So like, the great businesses live in stage 4 and sort of reach for 5. I don't think in the book, he couldn't find a single example of a business that stays in level 5 all the time, but that's fine. Like, you go back to 4 and you regroup. Anyway, Tribal Leadership is I think a really good fitness book if you read it with that lens. Anti-Fragile by Taleb. I think that's a really great book. And Taleb is a fan of lifting, which is probably why I'm a fan of him. Like, he's this philosopher who talks about coming out stronger when you're exposed to stress. But like, the body works like that. Like, that's what I think the fitness angle is on that. Like, the word anti-fragile, he means to say, like, it's not just staying intact during stressful times, but it's actually coming out stronger. And if you think about the way a muscle develops, like, that is essentially our physical makeup. So let's say I like that one. Let's see, what else? Switch by Dan and Chip Heath, two brothers. Mm-hmm. That's the writer, The Elephant, The Path. I think that we've probably all read that one at this point. But like, getting clients to be compliant, like, you've got, like, mindset is huge, and you've got to figure out a way to work with them and to get them to change, to get those three components working together to elicit change. And then, like I said earlier, I'm really enjoying the book Change or Die. Like, I'm probably right in the middle of this one right now, but I wouldn't be surprised if it continues to be as good as it is right now that it ends up on that list as well.
All right, ordering books. Hold on.
Okay.
He's adding. I'll add it to my wish list and deal with it.
This is a very expensive phone call, isn't it?
Yeah.
They always go like this?
It depends. Like, sometimes we don't ask this question, but a lot of times I end up buying a book or two, and it's like I said, I have audible.com, and I forgot to use it for like 6 months. So I had 12 credits saved up.
Ooh.
So I've had a bunch of more or less books that I already paid for. So
nice. That's rich.
Yeah. I mean, as long as it's on Audible, I find I walk my dog, I'm in the car, I'm, you know, cleaning around the house or whatever. I can kill like a book a week doing all that stuff. So
what kind of dog do you have?
I have the most immature, highly overactive, black lab mix of something. It's like he's a Rottweiler and a black lab, the way he acts sometimes, but he is crazy.
That sounds fun. I like it. Dogs are the best.
They are the best. He does sound fun. He's probably the hardest dog. Like, we've had dogs in my family ever since I was a kid growing up. He is by far the most, the hardest dog to take care of, because also, when you walk him, he'll try to chase everything.
Oh, fun.
Which means
like squirrels,
cats. If a car drives by, he will try to like run in front of the car.
Oh, gosh.
So he basically, walking him is a very overactive or very important job, just because I can't trust him to do anything. Like, if he went outside the door of my house, like I live in front of a pretty busy street, mm-hmm. could be a problem. So,
how old is he?
I think he was 4 years old this past Thanksgiving. He was like a rescue dog, so they don't know like what his age is or whatever. So
I love the mystery rescue story. I've got a rescue too, who just was dropped off anonymously, and I thought I was getting a golden retriever mix, and then that she's about 17 pounds, so that didn't happen. But
yeah,
that's
it doesn't
okay.
sound like she's a golden retriever.
More of a Jack Russell Terrier, actually.
That's cool, but, though.
Yeah. I love the surprise aspect. She's golden. They got that part right.
Yeah. No, it's. I'm sure the not gonna like get a refund or anything, but it's a pretty good description. Yeah, Marty like was he was, and again, it's weird. It's weird. Like, I haven't really talked about this like publicly, but I've pretty much gone like completely vegetarian and stuff like that, just because it's weird. Like this mindset that you get in terms of the way, you know, livestock is treated, and how to find, like, even if you're going to eat whatever, you know, making sure that it was, you know, humanely treated and not like locked up in a dark room its whole life. But, you know, I think that's just some of those things that kind of carries over, like people that do like adopt animals or whatever, if you're an animal lover, you know, how that kind of comes across. But he was found like in Texas with a clothesline wrapped around his neck. And he was basically like, he must have been like tied to a fence or whatever with a clothesline, you know, wrapped around his neck, and he chewed through it. And now, like, when I walk him, whenever he doesn't want to go somewhere, like if he wants to go see a dog that's walking by and I'm going the opposite direction, he'll grab his leash and start chewing on it.
Oh, boy.
Trying to like whipping his head back and forth. But
so you're busy. Yeah, that sounds really busy.
I mean, he's fine. Like, he's sleeping right now. He's getting older, but he's still,
but 4 years, like that's his personality.
Yeah. But yeah, that's something I'll write about down the road, how I've stopped eating meat so much. I don't know.
I was listening to your podcast with Coach Dose last night. So I actually knew that you were heading down that way. You just said you don't process it particularly well. And
yeah.
Right. And Coach Dose is an ethical vegan as well. I make sure that, like, I'm a meat eater, but I am careful about where I get it.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, like there are a lot of really, really sketchy factory farms, and like, I'm not into that at all.
So you don't go to Walmart for your beef and your poultry?
I don't go to Walmart for anything.
Thank God.
Yeah. Yuck.
Yeah. I mean, it's again, one of those things is you kind of play around with it, and Dose was good. Like, he gave me some tips. Like, mm-hmm. I got stocked up on some good, you know, plant-based proteins and, mm-hmm. and all that stuff, just to mix things up. And
yeah, he's a sun warrior guy. I've had his coffee shake in the morning. I usually end up staying at his place when I'm in the LA area.
Yep. That's
it's a tasty shake.
Yeah, they definitely improved the flavor of it from when I last tried it a couple of years ago. So, thank you, Summer Warrior people.
They got rid of the rice in it, right?
I have no idea.
Oh, okay.
Anyways, let's wrap it up with one more because fortunately I got to go to my real job. I got to go train some people.
Yeah, it's time.
So let's go with we kind of have a couple things we could talk about. Let's do. I like this one. We were kind of talking about it back and forth through emails, but adopting a "can I do that" attitude in the gym. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh yeah. So this philosophy came out of a tweet, no less, by my husband David Delanave. He had tweeted, "Can I do that?" is greater than "I can do that," which is complacency, or "I can't do that," which is defeat. And he came upstairs and he said, "I just made the most major tweet of my life, and nobody like nobody understood it or retweeted it or anything." And so I ended up writing a blog post about it on "Can I do that? Can I do that?" Because it clicked with me immediately. Like it's in terms of training philosophy, like we get in ruts, training ruts, because we go in the gym and like we know what we can do. And so that's the complacency stage. Like, but you know, you throw however much on the bar, 225, because you're like, you can do that. And so you'll do sets of that. Like you might add a little bit here and there, but it's, you generally like feel like you know what you are capable of doing. And that's, "I can do that." But if you shift that, or like, I guess in the worst case scenario, you're like, "I can't do that." And so you don't even try. But if you shift your mentality to "Can I do that?" it has cracked open my own training over the past few months. Just that shift in perspective, like "Can I do that?" leads to huge PRs, either in, you know, volume, intensity, or density. Like if you don't know if you go in with a questioning mindset or a question mindset, like you find out a lot more about what you're made of, and it tends to be more than you thought.
I love that.
Does that make sense?
Oh, it totally does. And again, it's just like, it's mindset, man.
It is. It's always mindset. And like with my clients, like when they first come in, you know, I have two friends who work out together in particular, who I'm thinking of, that embody this concept to a T. When they first came in, they had never lifted before. They started last April, I think. And they would apologize to these two women if they couldn't lift. They would, you know, pick up a weight and they'd be like, "Oh, sorry, you know," it's like, "sorry, I can't do very many." And it's like, you don't have to apologize for that. Mm-hmm. And then we entered the stage where I would be like, and so like I started them light and like got them competent in the movement patterns, and eventually then be like, "That looks pretty light for you. Like, do you think you can do more? Like, do you want to find out if you can do more?" And then that idea has taken root with them. And now it's funny that like their personalities have changed so much. And now it's all confidence. And I don't have to suggest a heavier weight. I don't have to ask the question, like, "Can you do more than that?" Because they will now tell me, like, "I think I can do more than that. Like, can I have a bigger, you know, like, can we add some plates? Can I get a bigger dumbbell? Can I use a bigger kettlebell?" And it's been really fun. It's been really fun to watch because their progress over the past year, like, one of them had never, like, neither of them had ever lifted, but now one of them is deadlifting 300 pounds. Like, that's since April. Like, mm-hmm. I loved watching their journey. And I think it is all about this mindset shift. Like, they don't apologize for what they can't do, and they find out what they can.
Yeah, no, that's something that I work with my athletes all the time. It's just, you know, people that will either stick with the same, you know, 25-pound dumbbell for 3 weeks.
Oh, my God. Like,
come on. Let's give it a shot. What's the worst that can happen?
Right.
You don't do all your reps, or, I mean, we're not doing things that are high risk. Like, we're not going to go,
with
a 12-year-old and, you know, back squat 225 with them. It's going to be something that is going to be safe. It's like that, you know, self-limiting exercise type stuff.
Absolutely.
It's like TRX rows. Just bring your feet a little bit closer towards the wall and let's try it a little bit, make it a little harder.
Yeah, the question is, can I do more? Like,
yeah.
Can I do that? Like, that is really what it boils down to. And I now I say that all the time.
and it can be super empowering. That's a great call. Okay. Before we go, you alluded to it earlier in the show, but liftweightsfaster.com. What do you have going on over there?
Oh my gosh. So I've got next week, I'm putting out an absolutely enormous conditioning library. It is, I think I'm up to 100, as of last night, I'm up to 130 workouts.
Holy sh!
Oh my God.
I almost said holy shit.
I mean, you can say holy shit because that is
totally can.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I say every single day. That's why I stay up all night every night. Because I used my magazine background to put this together. Like I wanted to provide this really, you know, clean, easy, clear cut, resource for people who wanted to spice up their workouts, for who wanted, because I get the question a lot, like, what should I do for conditioning? Like, they're doing the same conditioning workouts over and over and over, mm-hmm. Because they can't think of what else to do. And I love coming up with circuits. I think that, like, that is, like I said earlier, like, that's what got me into really, really enjoying fitness and to getting really great results. Like, that sort of metabolic resistance training or cardio strength training or lift weights faster, whatever you want to call it. So I put together 130 workouts and I tapped different experts. And so there are a lot of like guest stars in this book. And like, you know, Tony G, submitted a workout, Coach Dose submitted too, Will Fleming, Molly Galbraith, Jill Coleman, Negar Fanuni, John Romanello. Like I've got workouts from so many people in this book. And so it's just like, and everything is shot. Like there's high quality photography for everything. So you're going to be able to see every single exercise that's in any of the workouts. I've got a huge exercise glossary that there are written instructions, like completely, you know, step-by-step instructions along with the photographed movements. And then I also then built a video library. So then there's some how-to on the more technical lifts, like the more technical lifts have video how-to as well. Like I go over the kettlebell clean, the kettlebell swing, the kettlebell snatch, I think. I also go over some Olympic lifting, although I really do, again, like recommend that for really technical lifts that you get some in-person coaching as well. But I like for tune-ups, I think that will be useful. I tapped Diane Sanfilippo, who is a New York Times bestselling author of Practical Paleo. She wrote the nutrition guide for this thing. And then I asked my husband, David, to write a 12-week strength program. So that's, we've got Lift Weights Faster, which is the conditioning product. We've got Eat Better Faster, which is Diane's piece. We've got Get Stronger Faster, which is the 12-week strength program. And then additionally, I'm going to kick off some online, a 12-week online coaching group with one of my co-coaches at Movement Minneapolis, Jennifer Blake. And so the two of us are then going to support anybody who buys coaching to support if they bought either Get Stronger Faster or Lift Weights Faster to kind of, you know, walk them through, give them a little TLC and one-on-one for any questions they have about how to use the resource. But I tried to make it as complete as possible so that somebody could pick this thing up, learn some new skills and just be completely, to have all the information they need to get going. So I'm really excited about it, even though I'm super tired.
Sounds like it was well worth it, though.
It will be. It will be, yes.
A little sacrifice. Hopefully you get a little bit of vacation soon.
I'm running away to Philadelphia the second I'm done with the launch. That's my favorite place on earth, by the way.
So Philadelphia?
I love it. I used to live there. I miss it all the time. So many of my friends live there. So I'm going to spend most of the month of April in Philly.
All right. I can get down with that.
That's nobody fine. Understands my love for Philly, but it's an underrated place.
I figured like a beach or
No, Philly for sure.
Okay. Oh, well, it should be warming up a little bit anyways.
Yeah.
All right. So for people that are listening to the show, if you do want to help support the podcast, I will have a specific link in the show notes for this episode where you can click through and everybody wins. You get the awesome package, also a little bit. Gets kicked towards the FitCast way to kind of keep the podcast going and keep the servers spinning. I guess I don't know if they to keep them turned on. I got to pay my server guy. So if you do, you know, if you are thinking of checking it out, I would greatly appreciate that. But man, this flew by really fast.
I know. We've been on the phone for so long, but it has gone fast. I hope it's gone fast for the people who listen too.
Yeah. So let's do this. Let's, we'll, this is going out. People, if there's like a lot of follow-up stuff for Jen, maybe we'll get you back on after you're, you know, go to Philly, rest up, read some more, come back with some more book recommendations.
Okay.
And maybe we'll have you back on and to, you know, just do some follow-up stuff and just talk about some more stuff. Like I said, I feel like this just kind of flew by. So let's
I cannot thank you enough for having me on today. I appreciate it so much. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, and of course we'll see you at Perform Better either one way. I think I'm going to the trifecta this year. I'm going to all
three.
Are you? So
oh,
yeah, I gotta push the products and stuff. So I gotta do that. And it's always great. So again, thanks as always to everyone out there for supporting the show. You can go to iTunes and subscribe on there. Submit a review if you haven't already. You can obviously check out the show on thefitcast.com. And don't forget to check out Jen's stuff. From what I've seen so far, it is super cool. And if you are like one of those people that just like for conditioning, I'm going to push the sled or I'm going to, you know, go on the bike and you want something different. Oh my God. Do yourself a favor. Go check it out and come back. Submit some emails and let us know how it's been going. But again, Jen, thank you so much for taking the time. We'll definitely be talking to you down the road.
Thank you. Have a good day at work.
I will.